good name is rather to be chosen than to be on any TV show. Some of these talk shows on TV, you talk about nuts. Okay, a good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver and gold. Okay, a good name, your name will get out to the community, to people in your area, no matter what. I don't care if your name has been a bad name in your area. People will eventually find out about your name or your character. Now, a good name or your name is what we often call reputation. Reputation is what man thinks about you. Character is what God knows about you. And I would dare say a good name for a preacher is that people in the area, the businessman, basically, viewpoint of view is basically, I think he's nuts regarding the Bible, but the man does pay his bills and is honest about his work. The average common individual or something like that, I would hope they would look at you as the guy's just common like I am, and I can talk to him, and he's a friend of sinners. One time I was coming out of the jail at Rensselaer on a Saturday morning, when I usually visited on Saturday mornings, and this woman was coming in to see her husband. And actually, we helped kind of put their marriage back together, but then it busted up anyway after the second time, third time, I can't remember which. And she's just sitting there talking to me, and I'm sitting there thinking, boy, isn't this a sight? This woman's sitting there talking to me, and I'm just having a conversation with her, and her life was pretty well shot. But then she just said off the cuff, she said, you know, people like me on the streets, look at you like you're a friend of sinners, something like that. And I thought that was pretty decent. And I didn't have no clue that that's the way she viewed it, but that's the way she did. You say, where's your life today? Messed up, as usual. But whenever they come around, I try to help them out. And that's the thing about people that come out of rough backgrounds. I mean, just tough, rough, drug culture, fighting, you know. And those people, it's hard for them to come out of that culture, especially when they grew up in it. Because that's all they know. And the only friends they have are those friends. And sometimes, the sad thing is sometimes those type of people knows what friendship's better about than Christians do. But what do you do with those folks? I just help them out anytime they come around. And I won't see some of them for 3 or 4 or 5 months, and then they'll give me a call or show up. And I just try to help them, do what I can to help them. Why should you help them? Well, what if God put you in that position? Wouldn't you want somebody to help you? You know, people that have gone through divorces, I've always been there to help them. Don't sit, you know, even a preacher friend of mine that went through a divorce, I didn't sit there point my finger at him. I just did what I could to help him. Why? Because that could be me, and I'd want somebody to help me. And the Bible says Jesus Christ is a friend of sinners. Most people, when they talk about trying to get prospects for church, most of them view it because they can get something out of them. When you're trying to help somebody else, the widows, the orphans, people that you know and never get help out of them, that's closer to pure religion is what the Bible calls it. Okay, but a good name is rather to be chosen than great riches. Implying somebody, in most cases, in order for somebody to get riches, they have to do something underhanded and crooked. Isn't it interesting when the rich young ruler came to Jesus Christ, and he said, what commandment should I obey to, you know, inherit eternal life? And the Lord said, told him, that, you know, what he's supposed to do. And then the Lord mentioned in that list, He said, defraud not. I thought that was rather interesting, why he'd say that to a rich young ruler. Is because more often than not, in order for many to get rich, they have to defraud somebody along the way. Not in all cases, but bankers, yeah. When you understand the banking institution and how that runs in America, defraud not. I thought that was interesting. The Lord threw that in there. Okay, then it says, in loving favor rather than silver and gold. Loving favor from who? See, favor from God, they would have to say. Loving favor from the Lord. And the way we get in the Lord's favor is back in Proverbs chapter 3. Verse 1 through 4, in order to get in God's favor, my son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. For length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee. Let not mercy and truth forsake thee. Bind them about thy neck. Write them upon the table of thine heart. So shalt thou find favor and good understanding in the sight of God and man. So that's how we get favor in God's eyes. Loving favor rather than silver and gold. Okay, so verse 1, chapter 22, implying that the sad truth is a lot of times in order for somebody to get wealth is that they have to step on somebody's face in order to get it. Okay, and I know a lot of Americans, we, you know, look at the term riches or wealth. It's a relative thing. It's one of those terms that are relative terms because anybody in America is wealthy. What's the average salary you're paid? $116 a month in Ukraine, average pay. And what's their average rent? Yeah, how do they pay it? How do they do that? Oh, okay. Okay, verse 2. The rich and poor meet together. The Lord is the maker of them all. Okay, so didn't we have a president that had a war on poverty? I think it was LBJ, right? Started a war on poverty. What an idiot. The war on poverty is another way of saying redistribution of wealth. That's all that it is. Take from somebody who's productive and give to somebody who's not. And it's not the one who's productive who has a choice of where it goes. It's somebody at the top who's earning 6 and 7 figures, taking it from somebody else, and then giving it to somebody in order to buy votes. You know, that's the common sense approach. Okay, the Lord is the maker of them all. The word maker, John 12:8, that's when the Lord said, the poor, ye have always. And poverty, you know, is good for a lot of folks. Because you have faith in God. Americans get trust in their bank account too much. And get trust in our economy too much. And it's amazing. We are at the way our economy and the way our business structure is set up in America, it can go belly up any minute, any time. And it's technically up to the bankers. See, they control the price of land through foreclosures. What caused the depression? Oh, it was just some sort of a victim, America, you know, the depression. And obviously, you know, Americans, when it went through the depression back in those days, they were people of hard work, character. If the bankers decided to do, and they're the ones who decided to do it, if they decided to do that today, oh man, all hell would break loose today. They'd kill you over stuff today. You see, what you say, what caused the depression? Well, high interest rates. Who decides that? See, the Federal Reserve decides that. You know, they could actually have a negative interest rate and make buku bucks. Unbelievable. And in fact, in Japan for a while, they did have a negative interest rate. Now, I've given this illustration before, but under our system of credit today, let's pretend we're going to start a bank on Monday. Person number one walks into the bank and puts $50 in deposit. Person number two walks in the bank and asks for a loan. Okay, how much can the bank loan that person number two? How many think $50? Pardon me? $450? Well, I should say the reserve of the banking is 5%. Okay, if we make it 5% reserve, how much can the bank loan them? 95%, so they can loan $1,000 off of 50. How do they do it? Pick it out of thin air. And then 1 year later, you have to pay the $1,000 back plus interest, which they never loaned you. Isn't that amazing? And if you read your mortgage contracts, they'll have in there a waiver clause in there because they know that they cannot demand payment, presentment it's called. They cannot demand payment for this loan because that would be a violation of the law because it wasn't a loan. It was an exchange is what it was. Phenomenal how that works in this country. And that's what the Federal Reserve set up. That's what the bankers set up. Why did they set it up that way? Look in verse 7. Mr. Rothschild said, I care not who makes the laws. It's the one who controls the money, runs the country. And verse 7 says, the rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. And what tables did Jesus turn over? The money changers. And that's technically what they're doing in what's called loans. It's not a loan. It's a exchange of a mortgage note for some numbers in your bank account. That's all it is. And it's a real crooked system. In Ezekiel chapter 18, verse 13, the Bible issues the death sentence for the one who charges usury. Martin Luther used to teach that. Martin Luther used to teach that in his day during the Reformation, that the usurer, that's interest, our word for interest, deserves to be hung from the gallows. That's quite a statement, isn't it? Why would it be like that? Well, it's because a murderer shoots you and kills you instantly, but a banker slowly robs from you and takes your livelihood away from you. Now, who at the bank knows these things? Not the teller. She don't know it. Probably the only ones that understand what they're doing is the president. Maybe the vice president. Maybe the loan officer, but I even doubt that. Okay. Bill Day, he's not here tonight, he teaches business at Manchester College. He's the one that drives 2 hours. He has a banker's son in his class. And he mentioned this in class. So he asked the banker's son to go home and ask his dad's a bank president, do you really make loans out of thin air? And his dad told him yes. He told him. And Bill asked him, you're going to go back and ask your dad if he's going to tell every person that walks in when they ask a loan if he's going to tell them that. No, he ain't going to tell them that. You see, that's why they could actually have a negative interest rate and still make money. Make lots of money. Okay, because, okay, if you loan them out $1,000, where'd they get the $1,000? They just got out of thin air. And then when it comes back to pay it back, paying back $950, they got $950 for nothing. See, that's why it says in verse 7, the rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. When Mr. Rothschild set this up, he ended up having four boys, and he sent each of his boys to, like, one was, like, in England, one was in France, and three other countries. So he had his own sons. When this thing was starting out, he had his own sons in five different countries. And there was a war at that time, and his own sons financed the war on both sides. And when Mr. Rothschild died, before he died, he had certain rules for his family, and one rule for his family was to never marry outside of second cousins, because they wanted to keep it within the international family. That's what he wanted to do. You can read all about Rothschilds in a couple books. You can read about that feller. Okay, verse 2, the rich and poor meet together. The Lord is the maker of them all. Verse 3, a prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. Okay, foreseeing evil, going into cities, if you're going into a city, if you're raised in a country like I am, going into the city, you got to watch out. You got to be very observant of things, because, you know, you're going to be the newest victim if you don't be careful where you go. You need to teach your children these things. When they go into certain areas, they need to be alert of what's going on. They need to be watching. They need to look out for muggers. They need to know where to park on their lights. They need to how to observe things, because we don't want them to be victims. And I know it's looking at people, you know, from a rough standpoint, but you have to be that way in order to protect yourself. Okay, a prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself. Okay, so foreseeth the evil as far as in Nazi Germany. Did people foresee the evil? Some did and left. Some Jews tried leaving, but the American government wouldn't let them get out, sent them back. And so as far as national things go, you got to foresee the evil and hide yourself. I read an account of somebody in Romania before communism came in, and this guy figured that when communism come in, it was going to take his tractor from him, so he took his tractor apart piece by piece and encased every part with grease and buried it in his backyard. And in 1992, when the walls, so-called walls, came down and that dictator got killed, he dug it all back up, put it back together, and started using it. Now, that's waiting a long time. But that's foreseeing the evil. Farmers, when communism come in, farmers are usually shipped off, shot, land taken from them. And Luke's music teacher, his violin teacher, this happened to his family. His grandfather had a large farm. And they just took his grandfather and shipped him up to Siberia and took it from him. And then his family just had to try to scratch out a living. Okay, so a prudent man foreseeth evil. That verse is also found in 27:12, very similar. A prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. Now, some Americans saw these things. We had some good congressmen back in the 1910s who foreseen the danger of the Federal Reserve System. Charles Lindbergh was one such man, and he warned about the outcome of the Federal Reserve System. And was that the reason his child was kidnapped? I would dare say that's true. Okay, and he warned about these things. Now, some of these people back then, they were, you know, stashing gold and silver because they knew the paper currency was of no value. Now, up until 1950, the Federal Reserve notes did say on there, on that note,
that this note was redeemable in lawful money of account. Now we have, I have several of those notes where it says it's redeemable of lawful money of account. And when I get my ducks in a row, I want to take that to a bank and demand lawful money of account from a bank president. What's lawful money? Well, that's gold or silver. That's for the coinage. Okay. Plus the Coinage Act of
1792.
Because they put the numbers in your checking account. It's just numbers. Yeah. The Coinage Act, for example, when we say the word dollar, we think of a currency, one, dollar. But dollar is a unit of measure. If you would say quart, give me a quart, people would say, quart of what? Quart of milk, quart of water. And a dollar is a unit of measure, like a quart, in that if you say, I'd like a dollar, in the old days, they'd say, dollar what? Coin, gold, or silver? Which? And a dollar in the Coinage Act of 1792 is defined as gold or silver with so much weight. 0.77 of an ounce. Okay, so it's defined right in there. So when we have Federal Reserve notes where it says $1, that's, they're just making that up. And so if you had a $10 note, Federal Reserve note, and it has 10 on there, then that, if you go to a bank, you've got a 1950 or a 1934. I've got both, several of them. If you take that to a bank president, demand lawful money of account, he is required by law to give you 10 silver dollars. Now, you know what those are worth, about $7-$8 a piece. Now, is he going to do it? Probably not. And so what you'd have to do is probably sue them for what's called specific performance, and I doubt you can find a judge to rule on your side, so you're just going to have to fight it. So that would be one that would be a good fight, be a good one. Now, we have somebody, Rensselaer, that he's got a couple bank tellers that whenever they see these old notes, they just set them aside. And he comes in, and if they got a 20, he gives them a 20, you know, the fake 20s now, and then he takes the other 20. And once we get this thing kind of figured out, our ducks in a row, we're going to try to play around with this, see what happens. It's been reported up in Wisconsin. One time a guy went into a bank and did this, and the president, I'm hauling around with him, and finally he said, okay, give me a couple weeks, and we'll get you some. And then he did give it to him, and then he told the guy, please, don't you ever come back here again. Well, you see, they're required by law to do it. If the bank is a Federal Reserve Bank, meaning it's a member of the Federal Reserve banking system, they're required by law to do it. Now, I'm not talking about silver certificates. I'm talking about it says Federal Reserve note. That becomes a contract between you and the bearer. So if you have old currency, look at that one part at the top where it says this note is legal tender for all debts and so forth, so on. The old currency had in there, and is redeemable in lawful money of account. Is that telling us that this was unlawful money? You say they did it that way because they knew the Americans back then understood it. And then in the 1950s, the last year, they printed that section on there. And when LBJ started printing in 63, of course, they took that whole thing off. And they took the silver from us. That would probably be United States notes. United States notes is a constitutional provision where a president can issue paper currency as the United States. The Federal Reserve is a different corporation. Congressional note. Right. 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 Okay, that's 3 verse 4. By humility and fear of the Lord are riches and honor and life. Okay, Old Testament doctrine, that would be basically a requirement. But yet, New Testament, we're going to have to apply that spiritually. Okay, by humility. I believe humility is the greatest virtue in the Bible. It's an internal thing. It's an attitude. It's an attitude between you and God. The word meekness is very similar to it. It's an internal thing. It's nothing that can be demonstrated. You can demonstrate boldness and confidence, but yet have a humble mind in this thing, because humility is between you and God. Nobody can read that heart. Okay, when you speak boldly for Jesus Christ and you are confident that this book is right, the carnal Christians will say, you're cocky. That's what they'll say. You're proud. But you see, they can't read your heart. But then again, you come back with them and say, well, I thought you weren't supposed to judge people. You say, well, we know that you are supposed to judge at all times. Yeah, but they don't know that. Just throw it right back in their face and see what they got to say. Because they're judging inside your heart is what they're doing. It's amazing how they can do that. They must be God. Okay, by humility and fear of the Lord are riches, eternal riches, riches in heaven, honor, honor in heaven, and life. That's the only way we can approach that, because the greatest Christian who ever lived, you know, the Apostle Paul had nothing when he died. Verse 5, thorns and snares are in the way of the froward. He that doth keep his soul shall be far from them. Thorns and snares of life, you know, troubles of life, you know, always have to change their plans because of frowardness. God's interfering with them. Verse 6, very important verse for parents. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, you know, obviously we know that Cain and Abel came from the same family, same parents. Once a child gets a certain age, you know, it's their heart. But it is our responsibility to train them. Now, when we talk about training, as in basic training, that means teaching and training our children in every area of life. A lot of times we fail in our training, and then when our child embarrasses us, we're mad at the child, but yet that's the time we need to train them, teach them in every area of life. Proper training is the greatest missing ingredient in the raising of children. People just don't take time. They know more about raising a dog. They know more about raising chickens. Farmers know more about raising chickens and hogs and cattle than they do about raising children. And, you know, they don't have a course in school how to raise children. They should. They should have a course in school about raising children. When I was 12, 13, and 14, I thought at that age about me becoming a father someday and teaching my children. I thought at that age. And, of course, I had a great teacher, my dad and mom. And I look forward to the day at those young ages, I look forward to the days when I was going to be a dad someday. And when Brent was born, you know, people would tell me enjoy them because they grow up fast, and I enjoyed them from day one. Never was a perfect parent, but I enjoyed my kids. And I did all I could to spend time with my children. People say quality is more important than quantity. You need both of them. Children, and you know, the blessing of being raised on a farm is you are forced to work together. You know, that to me was a great blessing. And of course, you know, working for my dad was a great joy and a great pleasure. You know, it's only a few times he had to really scold me. I had a big brother, and I always learned from my big brother's mistakes. A couple times I thought my dad killed him, man. I thought for sure my dad killed him. One time they had a discussion, shall I say, in the basement, and I was upstairs, and I could hear what was going on, man, oh, man. And my dad said, jump. I didn't question it. My dad hardly ever had to discipline me because I feared that man. But I loved him. And whenever he told me to do something, boy, when he said run, get something, I ran and got it. Didn't lollygag. I never lollygag. When Dad said run, I believe he meant it. And I did it. And there was times where I couldn't find the thing that he wanted me to get, and I'd run back, say, I can't find it. Then he'd go walking in there and find it sitting right there, usually right in front of my nose. And, of course, I do the same with my kids today. You know, they can't find something, and I, here it is, right here, look at you, right here. How'd I miss that? I don't know, same way I missed it when I was a kid. Okay, but wise parents enjoy their children instead of enduring them. You know, it's the average American household, they're just putting up with their kids. We need to enjoy them. And then train them to do right in every situation. Down in a footnote, I have abusive and neglectful parents ignore the moral development of their children and use inconsistent discipline. Discipline is insufficient in itself for complete training. If a person's too harsh with their children grow up thinking the world owes them, or the world is against them. If they're too lenient with their kids will grow up thinking the world owes me a living. And of course, that's where most of them are today. The world owes me a living. Thanks to old Dr. Schrock and stuff. Spock. That's what it was. Some spick, spock, spook, whatever he was. Okay, verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. 7, went over that one. 8, he that soweth iniquity shall reap vanity, and the rod of his anger shall fail. Sowing iniquity, idea is placing it in your heart. Iniquity, sin, seem to have little different definitions, where sin is like a one-time act, couple times act. Iniquity seems to be sin that's ingrained in your character. Notice it's got more eyes in it. Sin's got an eye in the middle, but iniquity's got a bunch of eyes in there, where it's ingrained in your character. 9, he that hath a bountiful eye shall be blessed, for he giveth of his bread to the poor. Okay, a bountiful eye, an eye of blessing, an eye that sees things that are prosperous. It's always willing to work hard about things, but yet he gives of his own bread to the poor. 10, cast out the scorner and contention shall go out, yea, strife and reproach shall cease. There's the basis of expelling a child from school. Of course, nowadays, if you use your fingers as a gun, they might kick you out of school. You know, pow, pow, oh, that's no tolerance, kick them out of school for that. Okay, cast out the scorner. This is often what happens in a church. I believe the right kind of preaching draws the right crowd, and the wrong and repels the wrong crowd, 90% of the time. I dare say that's true. But you'll have some that just seems to be glutton for punishment, where they just sit there and just get mad at you and hang it out as long as they can and just hate the preacher and hate what's going on. But yet, eventually, that crowd often take off, but there's going to be times you're going to have to deal with something. You need to follow the Bible steps, and if it comes time to kick somebody out, kick them out. I'd say a sodomite's one of those you kick out. A thief? No, we didn't kick that young man out. In fact, one of the rules we had is in order to show us your repentance, you got to become faithful to church. Okay, and so that was one thing I told him. It's not time to kick you out, pal. It's time for you to be in church. Not to take the offering, though. No. Pay it back. So, okay, let's see, that's 10. Some of you weren't here last week. I mentioned last week we caught a thief down in Rensselaer. We caught him in the act. My kids and I stayed overnight on a Sunday night. He came in on the Monday morning, so we caught him in the act. So that's a blessing. See what the Lord does. Verse 11, he that loveth pureness of heart, for the grace of his lips, the king shall be his friend. The king, Jesus Christ, doctrinally, and the Lord become your friend because of your heart. And the man that was a man after God's own heart was David, King David. And there's one time in the Bible that, where the Lord uses the words like, I like him. Only one time, and that's when God mentioned David. Where we're commanded by the scriptures to love the brethren. That don't mean we have to like them. You know, as far as personality goes, but we've got to love them. And there is a difference. Okay, he that loveth pureness of heart, having a pure heart. You know, I think of some of the folks I've dealt with, some real rough people. A couple of them I know of. One thing about some of these people I know about them is they're honest. They just may be as mean as a snake about some things, and they may be on dope, maybe doing something stupid, but yet when they get caught, they're honest. Okay, you got me. You know, I know some of them like that. And they don't try to cover it up. They don't try to hide it. And you see, covering up sin, that is a great way to get God's curse on you. The Lord wants us to be honest. And having a pure heart, verse 11. Verse 12, the eyes of the Lord preserve knowledge, and he overthroweth the words of the transgressor. The idea of preserving knowledge, Psalms 12, verse 6, the words of the Lord are pure words, as silver, purified seven times. Thou shalt keep them, O Lord, thou shalt preserve them from this generation forever. God has preserved this book right here. The words of the transgressor he overthrows. The 1901, I think it was, American Standard Version went bankrupt. 1952, Revised Standard Version went bankrupt. Same company owned both of them, Thomas Nelson Publishers, and they now own New King Jimmy. It hadn't gone bankrupt yet, but when the Lord comes back, he's going to throw it in a trash bin. And so we got us a perfect Bible, this old King James Bible. And there's been over 200 English translations since 1880. And this one is still the number one seller. This old King James Bible. Okay, God preserves this blessed book. Verse 13, the slothful man saith, there is a lion without. I shall be slain in the streets. Poor flimsy excuse. He's a lazy man. You hear all sorts of excuses from people you invite in the church. Man, all sorts of excuses. Amazing the excuses you hear. I even had a guy in jail tell me that he didn't have time to read his Bible. I thought that was one of the best ones I've heard of. Rensselaer Jail. Rensselaer doesn't have time to read his Bible. Okay. Verse 14, the mouth of a strange woman is a deep pit. He that is abhorred of the Lord shall fall therein. Okay, a strange woman is a picture of a false church. Okay, the true church is a virgin. Strange woman is a false church. Like the Pope. You see pictures of him? And they got him dressed up like Santa Claus. Yeah, I thought that was Santa Claus that died. What a kind of pressure they got them pumped up to. Now we got the flags are at half mast now in America for what happened to separation of church and state? You know, all this, isn't it insane? You know, and I saw a picture in a paper where, you know, we're not putting our flag at half mast, no way. Picture in a paper, you got George Bush Jr., then his wife, and then George Bush Sr. George Bush Jr. is like this praying, and the other two just looking around. Bush Sr. is looking around, and Clinton. Probably looking up at the nuns. I don't know what he's doing. Amazing, amazing. Strange woman. That's the Catholic Church, that's for certain. False church. It's an amazing thing, and you could show in the Catholic Bible where it's forbidden for, you know, someone to call a priest father. You can show them in their Bible, salvation by grace through faith. They don't read it. They just don't read it. Okay, so the mouth of a strange woman is a deep pit. Going to hell. And the amazing thing, it says, he that is abhorred of the Lord shall fall therein. Goes to the church. 15. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. Whose? All five are mine. And I had to use a rod of correction to beat it out of them. But it says, the rod of correction shall drive it far from them. And it seems like, you know, often they get into the teenage years when they get, boys, when they get 16 to 20, it seems like they just do real dumb stuff in there. I know I did. I mean, just ignorant stuff. And even when they get 20, 21, they just do real ignorant stuff. And the girls, you know, they don't do it as bad, seems like, as the guys. At least, you know, but they get 18, 19, 20, they're going to do something stupid. Why? Because they're foolish. A teenager's got an adult body, but yet a childlike mind yet. And so we need to understand these things, and that's why, you know, it's so foolish in America when a kid turns 18, the parents just say, hands off. That's so ignorant. That's where they do a lot of their worst damage, and sometimes they gotta suffer for the rest of their life because something stupid they did from 16 to 20. And mom and dad need to stay close to that child and guide them and direct them. If they've won that child's heart by the time that child's five, and stay close to that child, and even when, you know, a lot of times people say, well, when they get to be 13 and 14, they don't want to be hugged and all that stuff. Hey, I beg to differ on that. You know, when did my kids, you know, quit sitting on their mama's lap? Well, about when they put her legs to sleep. I mean, there's, even when that child is 15, 16, 17, never quit touching your children and hugging them and goofing off with them. You say, well, they'll get tired of it. No, they won't. Not if you stay close to them. And you say, when they turn 18, the only time, really, there's never a time that a parent stops on their children as far as, I don't care what age. Now, when Brent turned 20, I had a sit-down chat with him, and I just told him, I said, okay, you're 20. You're my equal. You're a man like I'm a man. And I'm going to do my best to never give you unsought advice. I said, you got to be patient with me. I've been telling you what to do for 20 years, and it's going to be hard to change. But I'm going to do my best not to do that. So if you're going to ask, if you're going to want some advice, you're going to have to come talk to me. And I think a dad needs to have that talk with his son when he's 20. Because when they're 20, I'm a man now. Yeah, they are. They are a man now. And they're going to do foolish things, but you just put up with it and don't say a thing. Because when you start piping up, then you're going to push them away from you. They're not going to want to be around. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's true. Sophomore means wise fool. Yeah, that is so true. Okay, so foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. Okay, 16. He that oppresseth the poor to increase his riches, and he that giveth to the rich shall surely come to want. You know, it amazes me, like you have these athletes all across this country getting paid multi-million dollars. When they go to places, people always want to give them something. Hey, the jerk makes $1 million. Don't give him anything. And the idea here is, Somebody's taking advantage of somebody who cannot defend themselves to get riches, and they're trying to buy off a rich man in order to get more riches. And the Lord sees that, and he don't approve of that at all. Okay, oppressing the poor, if you drop down to verse 22, who's probably the greatest one who oppresses poor folks, and that's in the courtroom setting. Rob not the poor, because he is poor, neither oppress the afflicted in the gate. In the gate is a Bible phrase for where the business takes place and the court settings. Lot sat in the gate, Genesis 19:1, and then when he somebody argued with him in Sodom, he said, "Will you be a judge over us?" Okay, verse 23 shows it's a courtroom setting. For the Lord will plead their cause. Cause number or case number. That's used both ways in courts. And spoil the soul of those that spoiled them. So verse 22 and 23 is a warning to judges and lawyers. That's what that's warnings for. And the reason why is because they are the greatest oppressors of poor folks. Meaning poor, meaning somebody who's not going to spend the money to fight it in court or can't spend the money to fight it in court. Okay, that's a good place to stop at 16. 17 through 21 goes together. And some great verses on how to learn the Bible. Okay, do you have any questions or comments? He that soweth iniquity shall reap vanity. As you can see, I didn't put any notes on that because I don't got much light on it. The rod of his anger. Well, if you got rod down there 15, I'd say it's a parent sowing iniquity, and his punishment of his children ain't going to do any good. Right. That's about the best I can give you on that one. The dean? Be angry and sin not. Right. You know, the basic rule is don't spank in anger, you know, but I'm sure we've all failed at that. Hey, that's hillbilly country down there. Anybody in church knows that any key works in the front door. And if you got skinny hands, you can reach to the mailbox slot and pull the door this way, too. And there's a door in the gym that's open, too. Yeah. Brother Mike? Balaam. Yeah. Balaam and the donkey. Numbers 22. The donkey had more sense than he did. Maybe that's where Mr. Ed came up. Maybe great relative of Mr. Ed the horse. When I say Mr. Ed, I'm dating myself on that one, aren't I? Anything else? Okay, how about some prayer requests? Okay, Don Connors. Is that yours too? Okay. Oh boy, I'll be praying for him. Okay.